That's my music. Hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. And I was just told by the producer that my guest has not yet called, but I suspect she'll call any minute. She was my guest. It's Dr. Nancy Sutton Pierce, and she was my guest October 30th, the day before Halloween. So we talked about fantasies and what adults are getting out of Halloween, and it is archived. You can find it on my website or on the Progressive Radio Network archive site. My website is drdianawiley.com, and to listen to the archive version. Dr. Nancy is a sex and relationship author, an international speaker, and a sensuality educator. And she is a fascinating woman and a friend of mine, too. She's also a voice on Voice America and has her own radio show as well. So she is media savvy. So I'm going to see, do we have her on the line yet? My producer, we don't. I guess they'll cut in when we do. So we're going to talk this time about where do we go from here in light of the hashtag MeToo movement. And this is so relevant. Next week will be in some ways a continuation of the discussion that I'm hoping to have with Dr. Nancy. If the producer is listening, I might give you her number off the air so that you can call her and remind her if she's needs reminding. But next week, I'll have Brad Coates. He's been a frequent guest. Many of you know him. He's a divorce lawyer who's written Divorce with Decency. All right, so I gave the producer my guest's name, her number, because she might need a little push, a little prompt is what I want to say. So, Brad Coates, we're going to talk about next week about America's growing gender gap between men and women. And it really is growing. With women's increasing educational achievements, with women's increasing economic power, we're going to talk next week about sex and pornography. And one reason I said it's going to be a continuation of the Me Too is further divisiveness. And with the Me Too movement, because we have this... Hi there, Dr. Nancy.
Hi. I'm so sorry.
Hi. Well, I've been... that's okay. You're here now, and that's the most important thing.
I'm here, yes.
Yes, and I introduced you while we were waiting, and so people know that we did the show on the day before Halloween, on the 30th of October, but today we're going to focus on where do we go from here, and in your words, Dr. Nancy, there is a harsh reality of what the hashtag MeToo has brought to light, and... So we're going to talk about that first, and then we're going to talk about ways to make consent extra sexy. But let's start with what's been happening. And you said to me when we did our pre-interview, intimacy seems to be going extinct. You want to start with that, Dr. Nancy?
Yes. Well, okay. You know, when we look at happiness around the world, mm-hmm. and people's self-perception of happiness, we're seeing a pretty drastic decline in perceived happiness. Mm-hmm. And there's an increase in perceived loneliness. And it's more and more with the younger generation. Mm-hmm. So when more than half of an age group, say between 15 and 25, say that they're lonely.
Mm-hmm.
And yet they are the generation that has been raised on access to the world instantly. We have to look at what's happening, you know, what's going on here. And we see the online dating. We see people frustrated with not being able to connect in relationships. And so the intimacy is declining, which is, I think, going to make people panic and act more
yes.
inappropriately, which makes the
yes.
Me Too movement more important than ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does seem that many men, and maybe especially the younger men who are on the internet a lot, and that they have an inability to integrate closeness and sexual passion. And of course, I see this in older couples, people who have managed to get married in another time, because mm-hmm. they have trouble with love and lust existing under one roof. Love and
sure.
lust, but it starts with the younger people. Now it's even perhaps worse. The loneliness, as you said. What was the word of the day on your radio show earlier today? You told me off the air.
Yeah, interconnectivity.
Yes.
Yes.
So,
and I mean,
we're not having enough of that. So
we're not.
Tell us a little more.
It's one of the most basic human needs, touch,
mm-hmm.
connection, to feel known. You know, we put out all this stuff on social media, but it's most of it's a facade, or it's a marketing tool. And
mm-hmm.
and nobody puts out, very few people put out the real truth, because truly, strangers don't really want to see your real truth. They want to see a perception. So people have...
That's true, and that's, don't you think that's one reason why internet dating is, and being able to sort of write your profile and pretend, contributes to this?
I do, because it's basically you're giving a sales pitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
You're trying to sell something that is not tangible. So, and that's why meeting people organically, in my opinion, is always going to give you the best results, because you get to be around a person's energy. You get to be in their presence. You get to smell them, feel them, look them in the eyes, you know, watch them in action. They're multidimensional. You know, we're not a description or a bio. We're not a profile picture. We're so much deeper than that. And that in that depth is where the intimacy is discovered. And so when we're living on this superficial interactive plane, there's a lot of frustration, because people are trying to get intimacy from that, which is impossible.
Yes.
Because it's not real. It's not deep. It's just the surface.
And
intimacy in and of itself is a depth of connection.
Is a depth of connection, yes, it is. And that's why it seems to be going extinct. And part of intimacy, of course, is the ability to communicate words, feelings,
yeah.
all of communication.
Yes.
In,
but people,
you know,
don't feel safe enough, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. They don't feel safe enough.
Right.
You know, this is meant to be a little frivolous, but there's a four-letter word that would help a lot of people with their sex lives. And it's not F-U-C-K, it's T-A-L-K. We just need the words. We need to talk more, and we'll... When we get into how to make consent extra sexy, we'll maybe expand on sexual communication. And but let's stay with this. when we spoke off the air, I mentioned that when you are just texting, and some single people these days are texting a lot for a long time before they ever have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is you're texting, and you don't get that oxytocin. So the cortisol may go up, and the oxytocin is there when you're actually the body language and the touching. And all of that helps with connectivity, right? And feeling loved and valued, and that kind of, it helps with the merging. And it's, you're not going to get that if you're just texting.
No, you know, I think the younger generations that have text messaging as their primary source of communication are really, mm-hmm. In a sense, trying to emulate what used to be letter writing. And
oh, yes.
What the difference is, when you sit down and write a letter, it's a one-way story. So you're sharing. You're sharing about your life, your thoughts, your feelings. You're writing. It's almost a poetry of sorts. You know, when you're writing to somebody that you are interested in, it's not a conversation, and so then the other person has the chance to read this letter that you've written and all that you've expressed and ponder it, and then write back a response. Maybe asking questions for clarity, but it's a much slower conversation, so people have time to read and reread and ponder before they hit that send button or put it in the mail. Whereas texting is so instant, and people use knee-jerk reactions to respond, and we have to remember that in a written language, you're missing about 80% of communication, the juicy mm-hmm. stuff, the body language, the tone, the facial expressions, all of that energy that comes, that gives you information. You don't get that in writing. So now you're texting spontaneously with emojis, with shorthand, instant, no time to think about, and then we wonder why people are having miscommunication.
Yeah, exactly. Because you're getting just a partial picture, and it's likely to be shallow.
It is. It's going to be shallow. Yeah, maybe because mm-hmm. you have to write a novel. And people are so impatient, they don't want to read that.
Yeah.
You know?
That's
and
right.
Now, the kids now, they don't even want to pick up the phone and have a phone conversation.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Those of us who were around a long time as adults before the internet, it
right.
just boggles our minds.
Right. But they, if you look at the statistics on loneliness and happiness, the people that are still reaching out to touch someone, you know, physically,
mm-hmm.
at least get the voice, be in their presence, look people in the eye, hold their hand, touch their arm, hug, embrace, kiss, be in that present moment with that person's physical body, the happiness and the life satisfaction is so much higher than with the people that just use this quick way of communicating, and they're so lonely and deprived, and their health is being affected. There's a huge adverse effect on your physical health and your mental health. We know that loneliness today is the determining factor for depression tomorrow.
Oh, that's so true. And and if anger begins to surface with a few of these, it might because they're so frustrated. But
yeah.
anger is always secondary to pain and fear. So
right.
it's very complicated. When I have clients who are single, and I'll ask, a lot of them have been texting for a long time and they haven't really met. So, of course, I encourage you must have a conversation on the phone even before you meet. Have a conversation.
I can suggest that.
Yeah. And then meet and look at the body language and the whole package. You'll get a much better sense. You make some very, very good points about and their health being affected with loneliness and depression and
I was an OB nurse in one of my lives. And
yes.
one of my research projects was on infants in orphanages.
Yes.
And when you look at infants that are abandoned and in orphanages that are overcrowded, many of the infants die. And
That's
they
right.
don't die of starvation or illness. They die of loneliness.
That's right.
And they call it, in infancy, they call it failure to thrive.
Failure to thrive. And you know, I'm aware that some of the first research that looked at this came out of post-World War II, when
right.
they looked at orphanages in Germany, where they
Poland,
kept the...
Germany, right.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Poland. And
right.
the infants were fed and all of that, but there weren't enough...
They weren't
nurses.
Help. They weren't
not
they
nurses,
weren't
but yeah, enough help to hold the babies.
Right, right. They would just prop the bottles in the crib, go down the line, prop the bottles, change the diapers like an assembly line, but never any eye contact, never any cooing, cuddling, rocking, singing, none of that, and they just die. So we wonder, you know, as adults, we're just grown up babies. You know, we
mm-hmm.
still have the same basic needs. And yet we deny ourselves those basic needs of human connection and human touch. My big recommendation to single people who aren't getting touched or people that are coupled and still not getting touch is to get massages once a week.
Absolutely.
At least you're getting some physical connection with another human being.
Yeah.
That helps you validate your presence here on Earth.
So, so important. Just to back up a little bit, I'm remembering a story, and it occurred post-World War II in an American children's hospital, and there was a German-American woman named Anna. She was a nurse. And when they couldn't figure out what to do with the baby because the baby was sick and they didn't have enough information or they couldn't figure it out, they'd give this little sickly baby to Anna, and she would carry this baby around on her hip. She was apparently a woman of some substance. She was round but just so loving, and she'd carry that baby around and she'd cuddle with it, and these babies recovered in the presence of old Anna, the nurse, the German-American nurse.
We've done that in the neonatal intensive care. When I worked in the intensive care, we would have these little teeny tiny preemies, and you know, they're in isolettes and nobody could touch them.
Mm-hmm.
And especially the little boy babies, because ironically, the girls were stronger. More little girls survived those being premature than boys. I don't know why. But they
I do. I have a theory about that,
okay.
even though
okay.
I don't have the nursing history that you have. So it turns out that boy sperm, so if you're trying to conceive a boy and you're not going to go the high-tech route, boy sperm swim faster but die sooner. So you want to time intercourse so that it's as close to ovulation as possible. And so those little boy sperm swim fast, guy sooner. The girl sperm, you don't have to time it so close to ovulation because the girl sperm swim slower, but they hang around. And they'll eventually impregnate the egg. And maybe that has to do with, you know, the inherent strength right from conception, right, of the female.
Tenacity.
Tenacity, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
It's pretty fascinating. Well, this nurse in a unit created like an external womb around her belly.
And, oh, really?
And put the little tiny babies inside that and carried them around in, while she worked. And they were just like cuddled up right next to her belly. And they thrived.
Yeah. I'm seeing a couple now who went to Russia about 20 years ago, 18 years ago, and they got two little girls. They were not sisters, but they were under 10. And they got these two little girls and adopted them. And they went through all kinds of red tape to do this long process. So these girls now, because they had insecure attachment, they had, well, in terms of attachment theory, we want secure attachment is the best, as you know. These little girls had no insecure attachment. They had avoidant attachment, anxious attachment, no attachment. And those attachment, lack of attachment is plaguing them. I see the parents. They still have trouble. These girls are now 18 and 20, and they have lots and lots of trouble with relationships, with college, with even though they're intelligent, but just so many troubles, and it all stems from a lack of attachment and being ignored and sometimes abused in the orphanages.
Right. That's all first chakra stuff, you know, with the root of life, which is security, safety, and having your basic needs met. And when we don't start off with that root being securely grounded, everything is a struggle because we're always trying to seek that connectivity and that groundedness. And then add on top of that, as we grow older in these societies where we're disconnecting, you know, people are just kind of floating out there, and there's just a lot more chaos in people's consciousness. They just don't feel connected and grounded.
Mm-hmm.
And it leads to, in the Ayurvedic terms, we would say your vata is out of balance. You know, it's like there's too much air quality, and people get spacey and forgetful, and you know, their immune systems are not strong. They're not grounded in reality. And when we see, you know, some of these young men out there doing these heinous crimes, just going on killing sprees, you have to wonder what, you know, where, if all of this is somehow interconnected in our society and our forgetting some of these most basic human needs, and that is touch and love and connection and intimacy.
Esther Perel says, and I really agree with this, she has a question that she asks her, oh, you know about her, but some of the listeners.
Yes.
So she wrote Median Captivity about 10 years ago plus, and her most recent book is The State of Affairs. She's a brilliant psychotherapist and writer and speaks 9 languages and so on. She says, her question is, tell me how you were loved in your childhood, and I'm paraphrasing her a little bit, and I'll tell you what kind of a lover you are today.
Oh.
How you were loved in your past, and then today, you know, if you were ignored, it's going to be very hard for you to be a generous lover and to communicate with your significant other or your spouse. Yeah. Tell me how you were loved, and I'll be able to have a pretty good idea of how you make love.
Hmm. That's really something. In the show that I did this morning, in the Conscious Living show that Mark and I do together now,
Listeners who Mark is.
Mark is my husband, and we're getting ready to have our 25th wedding anniversary next week.
Isn't that wonderful? You have plans?
I know.
Not yet.
And we're still hot for each other, which is even better.
It sure is.
It just keeps getting better. So I know for sure it's possible because I live it every day.
Absolutely. And you and I are alike that way, except I don't have quite the years under my belt. But with my now husband, Brian, I have 8 years at least. And
it's awesome.
And it's just, we just came back from a trip, and even when we're home, it's hot to put on a trip.
Yeah.
It can be even hotter, you know, that hotel sex.
Oh, I know. Love it.
and new experiences, which novelty, you know, it more dopamine is expressed typically with novelty. And of course, you're involved with hedonism. We talked a little bit about that last time and last year when we had two interviews. But I don't think we'll veer off on hedonism this time because we still have more to talk about with the Me Too and what it's brought to light.
That brings me to what Mark and I were talking about this morning was how a lot of times people misinterpret the word intimacy for the sex act.
Yes.
And that perhaps if you've been raised believing that intimacy and sex act were synonymous, you would be seeking that intimate connection through the sex act, but perhaps are frustrated with the outcome because you're not really doing the intimacy work.
And intimacy, I think it's interesting to look at the word intimacy and break it down. It could be into me, you see.
Yes, I love that.
And, because some men don't have the skills to be able to have the emotional intimacy, which so often is needed to make the physical intimacy really terrific.
Yeah.
Really hot.
Yeah. And I don't necessarily believe that that's gender dependent. Because I know a lot of men who, once they bridge that gap of the trained ego, you know, that if I'm intimate, that's weak or that's vulnerable or somehow that's not a healthy man, you know, expression. Once they bridge that and they really experience full intimacy with someone, there's this sigh of, oh, that's what this is about. It's a wholeness. It's a fulfillment on every level of your being. And it's hard to describe in words because it's such an intense feeling. But we don't
very well expressed
about that,
Nancy. Yes. And then you have an added problem that if men are having some inner difficulties, they may turn to less emotionally complicated forms of sex. And that could be, of course, solitary pleasures and paid ones. And I think that many guys will seek out sexual spaces that are the exact opposite, where they don't have to confront the litany of fears and anxieties and insecurities that would render the render even the biggest stallion limp. So they don't want to do that. So it's easier to do to have porn or paid sex or anonymous hookups over relational intimacy, because there's it gets so complicated for a lot of men. At least this is what I observe and I've read and I hear from my clients.
I would say you would probably attach the word complicated to something that you weren't familiar with or prepared for. Mm-hmm. If we're preparing our boys and we're educating our boys and girls equally about relationships and bond and intimacy and respect and communication and expressing your yeses and your nos and having those deep, meaningful conversations, then when they grow up, they just envelop that. It's not complicated because it's fulfilling. It's only complicated when you've not had it yet, and it's like everything's scary when you've never done it.
That's right, and there's no question that adults need to talk to their boys early and often about sexual ethics, perhaps gender dynamics, consent, pleasure, healthy relationships, and even. Mm-hmm. The risk to the boys of mixing sex and alcohol. These are big things in the news these days.
Right.
And you have a son and a daughter, right?
I have two daughters and a son and a son-in-law. Mm-hmm. And a daughter.
Right.
Right. I got a whole bunch of them.
Yeah, and you've got grandkids too, I know. I have a son and a daughter, and I know I talk to my son, and still do, on occasion, you know. Don't need to now because he's so evolved. But didn't you have those sorts of conversations with your boys?
We still do. You know, whenever we sit around a table together, the conversations mm-hmm. go deep. They go deep and mm-hmm. they go there fast. Because, mm-hmm. None of us really get off on superficial conversation because it's all just mm-hmm. la la la. You can have that all day with strangers, but when you get into your inner circle, that's when you want to go deep and get real and share. And mm-hmm. we go there and we know each other. I mean, my kids and my grandkids, they know who I am. They know what mm-hmm. I stand for. They know my passions. They know my favorite color. I mean, they know me and they know Mark. They know who we are intimately. Now, mm-hmm. they may not know all of our adult secrets, you know, all of our private things, you know, that are on a different level of privacy, but mm-hmm. nothing would shock them
mm-hmm.
because they know who we are in deeply. And to me, that's the intimate connection that people are craving in all of their relationships. It doesn't have to just be with a lover. It can be with your girlfriends or your man friends or anybody that you have deep, meaningful conversation with where you can share personal information and trust that they're going to hold it in a safe space for you.
Exactly right. This is very, very important because what's happening, and this was reported some time ago in the New York Times, in locker rooms, fraternity houses, and other all-male spaces, these young men will hear that sex is about conquest, about right. asserting masculinity. Through domination of girls' bodies. And here's mm-hmm. a quote from that. It's not like the guys say, dude, I made her feel great. This was a high school junior in New England. That never happens. It's always, bro, I slammed her. They've banged they've nailed, they've smashed, they've torn up, they've destroyed. I mean, it all sounds like they've had less like they've had sex and they've just returned from a visit to a construction site. So this is this is
truly
not a good thing.
I mean, it's all so it's all violence against women, and then we wonder why they still believe that they're entitled to rape.
You know? Oh yes, yes, yes. Entitled to rape.
They're entitled to rape. They believe. They really believe that they're entitled. If you're a woman and you've got a vagina, that they're entitled to have it whenever they want, even if it's not in your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because of this consciousness of acquisition rather than interaction.
Yeah, say a little bit more about that. That's a very good point, Nancy.
Well, if you're just trying to get someone, you're trying to conquer their body, you're trying to put a notch in your belt, you're not looking at the human being at all. You're just masturbating with their vagina.
How true. And and some women have reported that, even women who are married and in long-term relationships.
Oh,
it feels like when we have intercourse that you're just masturbating in my vagina.
I would
say
every woman on the planet has had that experience. I know they have, because men haven't been evolved. Many men haven't been taught or haven't been aware that that's how women feel. Because what do women do when that happens? Traditionally, women were just quiet.
Yeah. Oh, yes. So true.
Right?
The women.
Yeah.
I mean, that's,
you don't
and that's
say anything.
Right. And that's a big thing that the hashtag Me Too movement has achieved.
Yes.
A big thing that women don't have to be silent and suffer for years, perhaps. Well, of course, many still are because it's such a huge problem. Maybe this is a good time before we run out of time to talk a little bit more about how, because you have so many good ideas about ways to make consent extra sexy. And when we were talking off the air earlier, I said it's so important to use your words, talk about sex before having it, and you know, we tell our little preschoolers to use their words.
Use your big words.
And then, yeah, use your words. And but, you know, sexual boundaries are crossed, and for many women, even against their will. And it used to be for a lot of women that it was somehow their fault and their shame alone. And thank goodness our culture is now changing. We have a ways to go, but it is beginning to change. And sexual consent has a new standing. You want to say a little bit more about how we can make it sexy?
Well, to me, there's nothing sexier than an invitation.
Mm.
So if you're with somebody and you're turned on by them, and you're not sure if they're turned on by you, just letting them know that you are turned on by them. That, you know, for example, your skin looks so soft and beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to just touch your arm. I would just love to touch you. If that sounds good to you, please let me know. Because I would love that. So you've told the person what you want, how you're feeling, and you've opened the door for them to invite you back in, to invite you in. You haven't asked for an answer. You haven't demanded. You've just put it out there. Mm-hmm. And then the person can say, oh, my God, I would love that. I've been waiting all night for you to reach over and touch me. Please touch me. And the conversation has started. Mm-hmm. I had a person say, oh, my God, it's this consenting. It's such a pain. So that means I have to ask, can I touch your breast? Can I touch your belly? And I said, well, why not? That's hot.
Yeah, you know, right, right.
You're looking at them. You're looking at them with delight, and you say, "Oh, you know, I really would like to X, Y, Z," and that mm-hmm. person can say, "I would love for you to X, Y, Z," or "I'd prefer that you A, B, C'd." You know,
mm-hmm.
it opens the conversation so that you're both communicating what you want, what you don't want, what other alternatives are, what your boundaries are. Along the way. And when you're doing that, you're working all your chakras, because you're using your voice, you're probably using your breath, your body is responding, and it can be just hot as hell. It's like you're creating your own porn video right there. And you can keep it as hot or not. But that's the conversation that has to start. With the invitation.
Yeah, the invitation. That's, yeah, using our words, but it's about sex. It's really excruciatingly difficult for many.
And you can, you know, if you know, I teach classes in reading body language.
Oh, you do?
And reading. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And reading facial expressions and reading energy. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, we practice reading and then validating.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're picking up on something, instead of just acting on it, you would just express, so what I'm feeling from you is, and then you would express what you were sensing, and the person has a chance to say, to validate or invalidate.
Mm-hmm.
And it opens up that line of communication, and it also helps you hone your body reading skills. Because if you've never practiced reading people's body language, you know, I see people oblivious all the time that somebody does not want what they're putting out. You know, you can go sit at a bar, it's hysterical, and just watch people and how they sit next to each other.
Mm-hmm.
And you can tell the woman that's just annoyed as heck, and the guy just is picking up on it.
Is not picking up on it? Yeah.
Right. He's leaning in closer, she's turning away, she's leaning back, and he just moves in closer. And that's that mindset that what you have, I want, I'm going to take. And that's what we have to help men and women understand, that it's never yours for the taking.
Hear, hear.
Hear, hear.
It's never yours for the taking.
Nope.
I'm reminded that even committed partners have trouble saying what they want or don't want.
Yes. Yeah.
And, sure. Of course, people with hooking up with an acquaintance or a stranger, it becomes even more complicated using your words.
I recommend that
before you have sex, let's put that out there, too, before you have sex.
Yeah. Yeah, before you get hot and heavy, have a conversation.
Exactly. Exactly. And, of course, alcohol is muddling up some of the reactions, and then you really can't communicate as clearly. And then some men and women find talking about sex and condoms sort of cringeworthy, and say these discussions are hard because they could break the mood. Well, my goodness, that's certainly is a lame excuse, because if you don't have enough game to make that "shall we do it" dialogue sexy, I think you should consider yourself unqualified to take your clothes off. Can't have that discussion.
Right. Right. I mean, you can't give consent if you're under the influence of anything, you know. You just can't. And that's typically when people have regret. So,
for sure.
You know, whose responsibility is it? I think everybody has to take some more self-responsibility. Men and women both need to own their shit a little bit better.
Yep.
And not put themselves in harm's way. But when you are caught off guard and you are harmed, to speak up immediately. And
yeah,
not
speak
wait.
Up and say something like, the woman might say, I do not want to do this with you.
Right. Right.
And that if she says that clearly, it often will get people out of a dangerous situation.
Right.
You know, it probably won't stop a real predator, but that's maybe for another discussion.
Yeah, but honestly, the violent rapes with strangers are such a small percentage of the sexual assaults that are happening.
Right,
most
that's true.
Sexual assaults are by people you know.
Mm-hmm.
And family members, you know, is way up there. So that's where it gets tricky, because people don't want to stir it up. They don't want to cause a ruffle. They don't want to create problems for the family, for the workplace, for the friendships, for the community, whatever we think we have responsibility for. And yet that person just goes on to continue to do that to other people. So I think we have responsibility.
Yes. Well, so it sort of explains why some men will go, especially married men who've been in long-term relationships, and we're not talking so much about that, but because we're mainly talking about younger people who are lonely and not connecting at all. There are men that prefer to pay a hooker. And you probably have heard, I've heard a man say, you don't pay the hooker to come, you pay her to leave. And it just is less, the transaction is less emotional and involved.
Wow.
You pay her to leave. It's
interesting.
Yeah, and because sexuality is the sanctioned language through which men can access a range of forbidden emotions. Men that have trouble with tenderness or softness or vulnerability or nurturing, and these feelings, not with your sons, not with mine, but have not been encouraged for men.
Right. And that's so sad. That just makes me sad. Because I've watched my husband evolve over the last 3 decades in his friendships. And because I used to ask him, what kind of conversations did you have growing up with your brothers? And they were all very superficial. Just very superficial. They didn't talk about anything deep. And I'm like, wow, how did you survive that? You know, that just, I just couldn't, I was not raised like that. And so after, you know, being indoctrinated into my world for all these years, now his friendships, his male friendships are so deep and so intimate and so connected and heartfelt. You can just feel the love between he and his friends and the respect, and they share important things about what they're going through and how they're feeling, and they trust each other. There's a bond, and it's so enriching to his life. And I'm in awe of that, because he has seen me have that with my women friends for my whole life. You know, I've just got some really incredible women in my life that I know we know each other so well. We can finish each other's sentences.
Yes, yes.
And he was, you know, kind of envious of that. Didn't really understand it, and now he gets it. And it's just, I think I just watched him expand in who he is as a man and how he approaches his family and his kids and his grandkids and life. And he's just much more fully embodied, which is so beautiful to see. And
fully embodied. And, well, it's a good thing that he married you.
It is. It's a dang good thing.
It's a dang, and you feel the same. I know that
I do.
You know, we do have, if we're fortunate enough to have a partner, to have a spouse, to have somebody who is modeling kind of more evolving, but modeling more evolved behavior, those mirror neurons in our brains can reflect back, and we can actually become a better person by knowing somebody like that. I think that might have happened for your husband with you.
And vice versa.
And, of course, you've taken some lessons from him, too, I'm sure.
A lot, yes. He's actually taught me about love in a way that I never knew, you know. So, that's the depth of intimacy that we've allowed ourselves to explore, and not without some struggle and strife and challenge. I have to say that it's not always an easy path, but man, is it worth it.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
It is so worth it.
It is so worth it.
And
for me, that's what makes life worth living.
Yeah.
And that's what puts the sparkle in my eyes. Yeah.
The sparkle in your eyes, yes. When a woman remains sexual and has deep emotional and physical intimacy, she's aging very well. You're aging very well, and so am I. And it's because we have this kind of intimacy in our life. And we're very fortunate.
I totally agree.
And we're both in positions where we can do radio shows like this one, like the one that you do, and get the information out. Because people need this kind of information. And we can be, I hope this doesn't sound, no, I don't think it sounds arrogant, but positive role models.
I always say that either we're a warning or we're an example. We're one or the other. So we get to choose which one we're going to be. And I work very hard to be an example. I'm sure to some I'm a warning, but, you know, to most I hope I'm an example. And I do pay very close attention to if I'm walking my talk.
Yes. Walking the talk. And it does get, I think back, I just, you know, I was just in Arizona with my husband, and, you know, I saw a man that I was pinned to so many years ago, which back in those days it was engaged to be engaged. I told you this off the air, but it was really good to see how we had both matured. I read him out loud as we drove from the Claremont Colleges to Arizona, The Feminine Mystique, and he confessed to me all these years later that he didn't really understand it. And, of course, Betty Friedan's premise was that, and this was 1963, this was new, kind of new information for a lot of women, as it was for me then, that you can have love and you can have good sex and all of that, and you can have a family, and you can have work outside of the home.
Oh, what a concept.
Yeah, what a concept. It seems antiquated now, but that's, in 1963, that was still fairly new.
Oh, yeah,
and,
definitely.
And
just coming out of the 50s mindset. Woof, that's like rebellion.
That's right. That's right. So we are about to end. Do you have one final kind of takeaway? And then, of course, you'll be back because I love having you as a guest.
We always have so much fun.
We do because we're friends, you know. So that's lovely.
Yes.
So a final kind of takeaway?
Get connected in person. Make the effort to pick up the phone, go see a friend, make a date, get in person, get face-to-face with people more than you are now. It doesn't mean you can't use these great modes of communication, but don't let those make you lazy and disconnected, because your health and your longevity and your happiness are going to suffer. And
life
is too short to waste it suffering in ways that you don't have to. Get connected to real people, real time.
And with our busy, busy lives, you know, I use two acronyms that apply to a lot of my clients who have a marriage, a job, and small children, or even teenage children. DINS, which is double income, no sex, and TTFS, which is too tired for sex. And they exist, so we have to carve out. We have to be creative. We have to carve out time to be connected and have date nights and put sex on the calendar and all of those things, and make time for an intimate conversation with touching. Thank you, Dr. Nancy.
My pleasure.
I'll have you back soon. Appreciate all the good information.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody. Nel labirinto di un amaro autore.